Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. President Woodrow Wilson is usually a president that gets glossed over in our high school history class. We know he kept us out of World War I, and then he didn't, and then he didn't get the League of Nations, which might have prevented World War II from happening. But Pulitzer Prize-winning author A. Scott Berg covers all that in his book, Wilson. A. Scott Berg, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Happy to be with you today.
Our phone line is 614-8980. If you've got a question about the Woodrow Wilson, you want to say something about Woodrow Wilson, then please give us a call. He is a complex character, full of flaws, full of great intentions, very controversial even to this day, 100 years after his first inauguration. Why is that? Why is he still controversial?
Well, controversial and you know, much applauded in many ways, too. This is a man, at the end of the day, I think, was the most influential figure of the 20th century. I also think he had the most dramatic personal life ever to unfold in the White House. That being said, you see, so much of the world today is of Woodrow Wilson's making. That's why we still talk about him domestically and in foreign policy. And things he said and did have been used and abused, misused for the last 100 years. But whatever label you put on them, at the end of the day, they are Wilsonian.
And he is one of the part of the progressive era. And as he was president, he saw, what was it, four constitutional amendments passed while he was in office.
That's correct.
And many of them very much redefining government, not just a woman's right to vote, but another controversial item that was the way that we elect U.S. senators. That's now controversial again here in Texas. Many of the politicians running on the Republican ticket today are saying that we need to change it back to the way it used to be. So can you kind of talk about that?
Yes, and that would really make Woodrow Wilson spin in his grave. One of the great things about progressivism was the idea of giving more power to the people themselves. Before that amendment to the Constitution, senators were elected within each state by their state assemblies. And there was just great corruption there, and it really took the vote away from the people themselves. So direct election of senators was extremely important. But a lot of the progressive movement, you see, there are a lot of people today who really resent the government intervention, the federal government intervention into our lives. So that's why there's so much controversy, because so much of what Wilson did was so progressive. For him, everything was about leveling the playing field for all Americans. That was really what underlay everything he did as president.
Well, you're saying all Americans, and there's a lot of controversy.
With a couple of exceptions.
You know, first he was lukewarm on women's suffrage, and then later on he became an advocate for women's suffrage, and he was able to help get that constitutional amendment passed. That was the 19th Amendment.
Correct.
The 16th Amendment, or that with the state rights, or 17th?
Yeah,
17th. That before, the Senate acted as a defender of states' rights. And that was there because they were put in power by the states and given office by the states. And then and Wilson, because he was a student of government, a professor of government, the professor of government, he exactly realized what that change meant for him. So how did he take advantage of that?
Well, actually, the biggest thing Wilson did was he, being a constitutional scholar, knew that the least defined office in the entire Constitution was the presidency. It doesn't say what the president could do or couldn't do. So Woodrow Wilson interpreted that as he could do anything he wanted until somebody told him he couldn't, and that somebody would either be the Congress or the Supreme Court. So that being said, Wilson really came in and used his tremendous powers of oratory. He was just an incredible speaker. And he used a couple of other magical things as well. He began showing up in the Congress, which no president had done for over 100 years. If he had some bill he wanted introduced and passed, he would call a joint session of Congress, he would present his reasons for it, And then he did something even more amazing. He would show up day after day and actually work out of an office in the Capitol building, an office that is in fact put aside for the president, but nobody even knows it exists.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that office today. Is there like an inch of dust on that office now?
Well, there's no dust on it because it's locked. In fact, I was with a congressman in Virginia just this week, and I was talking to him about this room, the president's room. He said, "I don't know what you're talking about." And I said, "It sits right there in the middle of the Capitol. It is literally locked up. You first have to find the man who has the key who could let you in."
And that's just because I know how tight they are for space in the Capitol. And if someone says there's an empty office in here, they'd be shocked. So another interesting thing about Wilson that happened on his watch was Prohibition.
Yes.
And he did veto.
He did veto the
Volstead Act, but then
they overrode him. Yes, that's exactly right.
So how did that happen?
Well, that happened. It's a strange thing, you know, a Prohibition. But it happened really during the war. There had been people who were for Prohibition for decades, and they used the war as a good excuse, and they used it well politically to get rid of the sale and consumption of alcohol. The thinking being, we need to save all the grain for the soldiers and all that, and so we can't be wasting it on getting people intoxicated. And ultimately, and also we were sending the soldiers overseas, and everyone wondered, well, what's it going to be like when they come back here? You know, I mean, we want to have pure boys. You know, so let's keep alcohol out of the system.
Right. Also, there was a connection with the income tax because there was so much federal income that came from the taxation on alcohol that you that was also allowed the income tax.
That's exactly right. And, you know, this was one of the big things on Wilson's watch as well, you know, along with the Federal Reserve System, lowering tariffs. But he introduced the modern income tax, which, again, was a leveling of the playing field. It had a graduated schedule to it, such that rich people would pay a greater percentage of their incomes than poorer people.
Because having tariffs was basically a consumption tax, a tax that was passed along to consumers.
And it taxed everyone equally. A poor man paid the penny on a pound of sugar that a rich man paid on a penny a pound of sugar. So Wilson's feeling was, well, let's get rid of those as much as we can, you know, the goods everybody needs, and let's raise the money from the people who have the most money. So it is, to put it bluntly, a redistribution of wealth, but it's something Wilson really believed in. He felt it was the only fair way. Wilson wasn't against big business, but he was against unfair advantage if big business had it. He was against monopolies, what we called trusts. And that was something Wilson fought every day of his presidency.
Yeah, we're going to continue that line of thought in a minute. Real quickly, though, I mean, having to override a veto shows you that there was tremendous support for Prohibition, but he was willing to go against that support to say this. Why was he against it, real quickly?
Well, he was against it because he thought it was a real invasion. He wasn't even a drinker, but he thought it was a real invasion in people's lives.
All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation with A. Scott Berg talking about his book, Wilson. He will be appearing tomorrow at the San Antonio Express News Book and Author Luncheon. It is a fundraiser for the Cancer Therapy and Research Center at the University of Texas Health Science Center. We're going to have more information on that event on our website if you want to attend. They have a great event every year with fantastic authors, just like Scott Berg. So you definitely want to check that out. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. A. Scott Berg, he is a Pulitzer Prize winning author. A book he wrote earlier is Lindbergh. Now the new book he has is Wilson, just one book after another. They come back one every 10 years.
That's exactly right.
You know, and when you did Lindbergh, did you spend any time in San Antonio researching him?
He
trained as an Air Force flyer.
He did indeed. He did indeed. And much of the book takes place here in Texas.
So, okay, but now we're talking about Wilson. You know, usually when we talk about Wilson, we're talking about World War I. And there was a lot of good reasons why he was so hesitant to enter the United States into World War I. I'm really fascinated by his idea that he wanted there to be a large neutral body in the United States who could mediate peace and try to prevent, you know, try and bring, which was needed, like, you know, like Roosevelt did between Japan and Russia and other things. But gradually it became clearer that being a large neutral body wasn't going to work with the Germans and their U-boats torpedoing things like the Lusitania, and then to saying that American ships were no longer going to be free to travel.
Safe.
So
they were going to be torpedoed.
We don't need to talk about World War One. Okay. It's all done. You plowed that ground very well in previous interviews. Really what I want to talk about is Mexico. A lot of people aren't familiar with Woodrow Wilson and Mexico. Usually it's amazing. I've seen that when presidents first start out, there's a crisis right off the top, and that kind of sets the mood for the rest of the administration. And it was, as soon as he was inaugurated, there was a revolution in Mexico. Can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah, and they were a bunch of butchers, and Wilson didn't like it. And when in doubt, and, you know, one of the things I learned doing my book is presidents really get a lot of on-the-job training. You can't prepare to be president until you are president, no matter how much training.
Yeah, he was not prepared for foreign affairs. He was had a huge domestic agenda, but he became a foreign affairs president.
And he's a man who was an academician. You know, he had the fastest rise in political history. He had been a college professor and president in 1910. He became elected president of the United States in 1912. So he hadn't thought about the world. He suddenly comes into office, and there's just revolution going on in Mexico. And, of course, America had a lot of business interests in Mexico, and we had been pursuing something called dollar diplomacy. And Mexico really was something of a piñata, not just for the United States, but for most of the countries in Europe. They were really just sacking this you know, country of Mexico. And Wilson, ultimately, because there had been a minor incident in Veracruz, Wilson, when in doubt, send in the Marines. And it was kind of his first sense of presidential power. And the thing I learned writing the book is, and no president seems to learn it, there are no small incursions into other countries. You're either in or you're not in. And once you are in, it's very hard to pull out. And that is what happened with Wilson in Mexico. And then over the next few years, as Mexico went through several bloody changes in leadership, there were Mexican incursions into the United States.
Yeah, Pancho Villa.
Pancho Villa, exactly.
He invaded the United States, killed 17 people.
Indeed he did.
And then we sent General Blackjack Pershing into Mexico to chase him. This was a time when the United States had its largest military presence along the U.S.-Mexico border. And even today, you see a lot of these remnants of these forts still there.
It's exactly right. And we never got Pancho Villa. I mean, he was really elusive. And it was one of those examples of it was kind of a botched foreign policy. Well, I say it was a foreign policy. It was in search of a policy.
Well, it seemed like a proto-foreign policy, which set up what we were going to see as we got into World War One, because he did a lot of these joint speeches to Congress, and the first one was about Mexico. One of them was about Mexico, and he talked about how there needed to be some stability, that there had no legitimate government in Mexico, and the United States may have some responsibility to install one or help one form, but that would be interference, and the United States wanted to be a neutral body.
That is exactly right.
And then later on, as things got heated, especially he got a lot of pressure from our rich folks who were exploiting Mexico, that he decided that we needed to take a more direct action in Mexico.
No question of that. And with Woodrow Wilson, there's always one other component. This is the most religious president we have ever had. And for Woodrow Wilson, there was a moral component to everything. And it wasn't just the honor of the United States. He felt that the Mexicans themselves were being exploited. And he really did stand up for them. He said, "I don't want to impose our government on them, but we have a certain moral obligation to help them if we can." And that, of course, becomes the foundation of Wilson's famous speech in 1917 when he brought us into the war, when he said the world must be made safe for democracy. And that became not only the justification for our entering the First World War, but it has become the groundwork for all of our foreign policy for the last 100 years.
Right. It is the foundation of how we talk about, you know, when we send troops, the
Anywhere.
Marines. Yeah. That's where we're headed on that.
People cite Woodrow Wilson.
We see a lot of Woodrow Wilson in today's politics. We haven't spent a lot of time talking about the Federal Reserve here, but they're still controversial. There's still a lot of folks who, like, Ron Paul, the former Texas congressman and former presidential candidate, has railed against the Federal Reserve.
He has, and here's another example of Wilson wanting to level the playing field. Back in the teens of the 20th century, a handful, 5 or 6 bankers basically controlled the economy of this country, New York bankers. Wilson had this idea that if we had a Federal Reserve system, if we had a dozen banks all around the country, national banks, then it would allow money credit to be looser for people in the South, for farmers in the Midwest, and people out in the far West. So that was Wilson's notion behind it. A lot of people, like the Ron Pauls, think, well, no, this is just more federal government intervention.
Right. We would have these periods of panics and market collapses, and they would be able to, these private individuals themselves would be able to offer the credit available to stabilize the market, because we had no institution like the Federal Reserve. With the Federal Reserve, we were able to introduce M1, controlling the money supply in the country, and also offer credit to provide a way to stabilize the economy.
You hit it exactly. I mean, in 1907, there was a panic in this country, and one banker, J.P. Morgan, literally bailed out the United States. This really freaked out Woodrow Wilson. He thought, how can this be that one person can basically own a country, in essence? And Wilson didn't like it, and that was the root of the Federal Reserve System.
And also other reforms that he put into place to cover the stock market, which should have prevented the stock market collapse and the Depression.
Indeed should have, and had succeeding presidents enacted those, strengthened those, built on those ideas, we technically wouldn't have had the subsequent depressions and panics. But again, these were all things, Wilson was bringing in the 8-hour workday, workman's compensation. He put the first Jew on the Supreme Court. These were all wildly progressive ideas.
Right, and that was Brandeis.
Louis Brandeis,
and exactly. And he would have been comparable to, like, who in today's politics? I've heard him, like, if Obama had put Ralph Nader on the Supreme Court, that would have been comparable.
That's a pretty good argument. That's well said.
And so, but I want to get into the racial element of
yes.
Because you can't avoid it.
Cannot, so, and we should not.
I've heard you defend him as saying that he was a product of the South, and he was a Democrat, and he needed those Southern votes in order to enact his overall domestic policy.
Well, that's a big part of it. And my job is not to be Woodrow Wilson's defender. Make no mistake about it. I don't think segregation is a good idea. But I understand what his thinking was, and I'd like modern readers and modern listeners to get a sense that 100 years ago, and this you have to believe, and you'll see it in the book, Woodrow Wilson was a centrist in his day. In 1913, there were active members of the Ku Klux Klan proudly sitting in the United States Senate.
They were marching down Pennsylvania Avenue, Congress Avenue.
And they weren't ashamed of it. I mean, this was a badge of courage for them. We had Klansmen on the Supreme Court. Again, they weren't hiding it. This is just who Americans were back then.
But I want to get into this because, we had T.R. and then we also had Taft.
Yes.
Shut your mouth talking about Taft. And before him, and they had integrated the civil service, and then we had Wilson, who kind of did away with that integration.
He brought it back. They had made the first motions toward integrating federal offices in Washington, D.C., and it was just starting to take, but there was a lot of friction. It wasn't entirely working out, and fights were breaking out. And Wilson is now hearing from the South saying, you're a Southerner. Maybe you can put an end to this. And beyond the fact that you will get your political agenda just squashed, you grew up, they said, in the South. What it would be like for a black woman to be, for a white woman to be working for a black man? That's unheard of.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of women in the workforce.
Not a lot.
And that definitely, while it was integrated and there were jobs available for African Americans at the time, they were not given upper level management jobs.
Correct.
So they talk about that was a threat, but really, if that was real or not, maybe it would have been a few and isolated instances.
It was mostly
a fear tactic.
It was mostly scare tactics. No question
we had a lot of lynchings at the time, and Wilson did not come out in favor. The only time he came out in favor of anti-lynching law is when we were lynching Germans during the outbreak of World War I.
Well, yes, but he came out with anti-lynching laws against the blacks, too. And in fact, he is the first president to do that. And again, this shows you how backward the country was. But this is in the late teens. Wilson was the first president to do
that. There's so much there. I mean, I could talk to you for hours. You know, it's so interesting. Your book is interesting. You are speaking at the, I got my paper here somewhere, at the San Antonio Express News Book and Author Luncheon tomorrow, the 22nd annual. It is raising money for the Cancer Therapy Research Center at the University of Texas Health Science Center. A. Scott Berg, author of the book Wilson. It is definitely a must read for anyone who is a fan of U.S. history. It's a personal story about Woodrow Wilson. It's not just a TikTok of everything that he did, but we kind of get into him and his emotional life. So much we didn't cover. That's why I'm talking so fast. I wanted to get into
His wife running the country.
Yeah, you know, and what that meant for Ronald Reagan. When Ronald Reagan was shot, it was used as a president to justify what happened there. This is The Source on KSTX. We're out of time.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.